Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer Mahoney, and I am really excited to bring you the wisdom of our guests today. We're going to start off the show with a wonderful, wonderful soul and lady we've talked to before on Unlimited Realities, Linda Star Wolf. And she wrote two new books, but we're going to talk about one of them today. And the book we're going to talk about with Linda is Spirit of the Wolf. And she has an incredible healing center out in North Carolina as well we're going to talk about. And then after Linda's segment, we're going to talk to Ginger Ingalls, who has conquered her battle with cancer and wrote a book, To Love. And it's her discovery of spiritual awareness and growth. And we're going to talk to Ginger. And then we're going to wrap up the hour with Terry Cochran, my genius dietitian nutritionist who just is always a wealth of information, and she's going to bring in some healing aspects, healing foods and alternatives and herbs. So it's all about the earth and healing today. So it's all about how we can grow and heal internally, emotionally, awareness, and we're going to start off the show with one of my favorite women of all times, Linda Star Wolf. Linda, thank you so much for joining us today. You wrote The Spirit of the Wolf with your son, Casey. Is that right?
Yes.
What a gorgeous book. This is, if you can't see it, of course, audience, because you're hearing me, but the pictures in this Spirit of the Wolf book are just so incredible. The artistry is gorgeous, and the words and the information and the insight and compassion that goes with it. Beautiful, beautiful book. Spirit of the Wolf. It's the channeling, the transformative power of lupine energy. And it's by Linda Star Wolf and her son, Casey Piscatelli. Did I say that right?
You actually did.
Good. I have a little Italian in me somewhere.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about what brought you to write this book on the wolf energy and the wolf tribe.
Well, it's interesting. I've always loved wolves, and I think there's a lot of us out there who have, ever since I was a child and saw pictures of them, and my grandmother had pictures of them on her wall, and she was a big animal lover, so I've always just loved animals. But I've always had this connection at a soul level to the wolf, and I didn't quite understand it, but I just did. And then in my late 30s and early 40s, as I was really deepening my spiritual journey and spiritual adventures, if you will, because I'd had a lot of adventures in the 60s, late 60s and early 70s, and then I kind of calmed down and got married and had my son, who's now 38 this year, and, you know, was working with the mental health center, became an addiction specialist, and was doing those things, which were all good things, kind of a householder, I guess you could say, and working in the helping professions. But there was just something in my soul that was calling me to something more expansive. And I began this search and this spiritual search and longing, which led me to many different, I guess you could say, shamanic teachers and healers. But the one that was the most prevalent and powerful was Grandmother Twyla Nitch, who was the Seneca Wolf Clan grandmother. And she passed in 2007 at 94 years old. I always say 94 years young because she was young right to the last minute. But she was the Wolf Clan grandmother. And so the wolf has, you know, kind of this beautiful appeal when we see it in nature or images. And we see it everywhere now, posters, T-shirts, billboards, sides of taxis in New York City, you know. The wolf is an image that stirs something in us, like a remembering or a longing, like when the wolf howls up at the sky at night, at the moon, the stars, and that sort of thing. And so grandmother actually had wolves in her life. She was a Wolf Clan grandmother, and there's a whole set of teachings that go along with the Wolf Clan. And when I really put myself under her tutelage and was adopted by her as a granddaughter, I fully embraced the path of the wolf as I understood it from her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my interest really deepened. And
okay.
Yeah.
It looks like, you know, throughout the book, you discuss different aspects of the tribe of the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading the book, it was really, really inspiring and actually enlightening on many levels because, as I was telling you before the show began, we bought our son a dog last year, and he did a year's worth of research, and he really, really wanted a full-bred German Shepherd. And
uh-huh.
not having a dog before myself, only cats, I was ignorant, just blatantly ignorant, okay? And so we got this beautiful, adorable little German Shepherd pup, and we started raising him, and we took him through, you know, his first set of, you know, dog training classes and his second set of dog training classes. Well, now he's a year, and he's very smart, and he's so smart that it borderlines on scary. And as
yes.
I was reading this book, I'm looking at the wolf tribe, and I'm recognizing Apollo, my dog, the German
That's
Shepherd,
right.
in the wolf tribe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
I mean, all dogs are wonderful, and of course all dogs originated from wolves.
Right.
You know, grandmother used to say, you know, God made wolves and people made dogs because they, you know, bred them over and over and in various ways until they finally formulated tamer and tamer dogs. It's such an interesting thing. There's lots of films you can get out of even on Netflix now to see how dogs came to be and how the different breeds came to be and all that. But they originated from wolves. So it was human beings who really did that and who made that happen. And but definitely German Shepherds. We have an American Eskimo Spitz puppy, and my 17-year-old mixed Eskimo passed in November, and he was total wolf. And, we have another dog that I love dearly, but he's a dog. And
right,
I love
right.
him. And he's a dog, and he's loyal, and he, you know. But there's something about the wolf, I call them the wolfy breeds, because they have this intelligence that
right.
you can see them thinking.
Yeah.
And they problem solve, and they often outsmart you. And they really challenge you to come into your own power and to learn
yes.
more about being in the pack, what it means to be in community. They challenge you, as Grandmother Twyla said to me, the wolf spirit as well as the wolf itself challenge us to be our best self. And in fact, all dogs do. But they,
right.
you know, they really challenge us to be our best self. And I love that bumper sticker that says, I hope that I'm as good someday as my dog thinks I am. A good person as my dog thinks I am.
That's a good bumper sticker. That
you
really
know.
Is. Because there is. They have this. There's an intelligence that you have in their eyes, and you do see them processing. And then
yes.
you can also see the sensitivity and the compassion that's in
yes.
their soul through their eyes. It's like it's an amazing expression of facial changes that they go through. It's like a human.
Yes.
I mean, it's
they show
it's,
emotion.
Yes.
You know, there are some scientists in the past who say, you know, animals don't have emotions and things like that. And, of course, some religions say animals don't have souls. Of course, I've known from a child, my grandmother taught me that all animals had a spirit, that they had a soul like human beings, and that they were intelligent beings. And, of course, Grandmother Twyla, her teachings were right the opposite, and that she would say that the smartest thing on the planet are rocks instead
right.
of mountains because they've been around the longest, and they're our elders, and that then the next smartest is the plant or the green nation, and then the next are the creatures, you know, and she calls them creature teachers. And, of course, one of the smartest you know, I know we talk about chimpanzees and whales and dolphins, but one of the smartest are wolves. And, you know, it's like smart in what way? You know, it's like going into inner city and testing kids or testing people in a Waldorf school. You know,
yes.
there's different skill sets that you need
right.
if you're on the streets of New York City versus if you're, you know, in Marin County, California at Waldorf
right.
school. Right.
So, that's a great analogy.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And when we look at the wolf, because, you know, when we go into Native American meditations and practices and shamanic journeying and all of those things. We learn about our totem animals. We learn mm-hmm. about our spirit guides. And oftentimes the wolf is represented. So
yes.
how does the wolf come in as a totem animal? Or because wolf is one of mine. And
yes.
it's a loyalty animal. Can we talk a little bit about
yes.
that aspect?
Yes, you know, the wolf has so many fine qualities, and I just want to say this before I launch into answering that, if I could, is that the researchers now believe, and they have a lot of evidence to this fact, to make this factual, really, that the earliest of human beings learned how to be better human beings and how to be in communities and tribes, how to hunt, how to care for their young, how to care for their old, how to have spiritual traditions, if you will, where they dressed as the wolf, where they drummed and chanted, you know, and acted as the wolf and did reenactments and things like that of the hunt, and how they could use their intuition because wolves were so intuitive of where to hunt and where to go and when the weather was changing and things like that. Their senses are so sensitive that early humans' survival may have actually even depended upon their connection to wolves. So this is a very, very powerful thing on a very, even if you weren't spiritual or metaphysical, just to say, wow,
right.
Early human beings, as they were springing up, might not have made it had they not befriended the wolf and become co-hunters and cohabitators with the wolf and learned these things that they did not know, because the wolf was an older species. And Grandmother Twyla always taught that the stone people, the trees, and the animals were our elders, our grandmothers and grandfathers, if you will, teaching us and showing us, because we're adolescent beings still. And so that's something very powerful to consider, that the wolf, as much as it's being hunted right now, and it's been made legal again to hunt wolves in 7 states.
Wow, really?
Yeah, which is very sad. And I'm involved with some people around initiatives around that and lobbying and that sort of thing. That the wolves, you know, if it weren't for them, we might not even be here. But certainly we learned from them, and certainly wolves befriended us. They could have easily attacked us and killed us, and they may have at times, but they actually decided to be friends with human beings. So there was there was some sort of, I want to believe, soulful connection right from the beginning with wolves and humans. So it only makes sense that the wolf would pop up in people's dreams, visions, popularity on TV, icons, T-shirts. You know, I went into a store once. I was looking for a little wolf dream catcher, and I asked this store, kind of an alternative store. It was a huge store out in Arizona. And she said, no, we don't have anything. I said, I guess you just don't get anything with wolf on it. She said, no, we can't keep anything on the shelves with wolves on it.
Oh, wow.
And she said, is that your most popular symbol? She said, that and the eagle. But, yes, the wolf is the most popular. So I started asking, because my books, you know, I have 8 books, and they're in various stores all over the country. I'd go in, and I just asked. And every store I went into said to me that anything with a wolf on it sold.
You're kidding.
No. It was the most
popular
animal of all the animals. And she said that wasn't always true. So part of what I've written about and what I discuss is about how the age that we're in right now, the era that we're in,
right.
that where it feels like everything's accelerating and our consciousness is accelerating, and hopefully we're coming back to a deeper wisdom that we had a long time ago and blending it in with our modern consciousness. And I think that part of that has to do with our past relationship with the wolf, when we remembered its sacredness in our lives. And one other thing I'll just mention, Lisa, is that out of all the animal totems and clans all over the world, the wolf is the most popular and universal. We found that in our research. There's wolf clans in Ireland, in Scotland, in England, in Europe, all over Europe, in Japan, all over the Americas. and not so. There might be condor in Peru and eagle in North America, but, you know, it's just not universal. The others are not.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So do you think it's the pack aspect or the community aspect, the wisdom aspect, the intelligence aspect? What is it on a subconscious level do you think we're being drawn to the wolf for?
I think that human beings and wolves share a similar soulfulness around love and compassion for others. I really do. I think that we're pack animals too. You know,
right.
I think we're all, that everything has a spirit. And I think that we're, you know, that human beings are also part mineral, part animal, and part tree, part green nation. And that the animal part of us that has developed to its higher aspects, just like the wolf, is extremely compassionate, loyal. You spoke about loyalty.
Right.
Well, loyalty has to do with being honest and truthful and dedicated. And like in Don Miguel Ruiz's work, the Four Agreements, you know, doing your personal best and, you know, and telling the truth and keeping your word, being impeccable with your word. And, you know, you just won't find a lying wolf.
That's true.
You know?
That's animals.
You know, they don't lie. And they are especially the wolf, they might argue with you. You know, I have this puppy and he's 8 weeks old and I take him for a walk and he's a little alpha boy. I call him Mystic. And, you know, he's my little mystic, but he's an Aquarian, born February 10th, but he thinks he's an alpha, you know.
Wow.
And I have to respect him and not bully him at all, but to also remind him about the pack.
Right. You're the one in charge, right?
That's right. And that's really, really important. And then to also allow him to have his times when he's in charge, too, of things that he can be in charge of. You know, and wolves really need to know who's in charge, even more than dogs. They always need to know. Otherwise, they're not safe. They don't feel safe. And there has
and
to be a pack
also,
leader.
There's also with the wolf energy, there's a, as we were talking about the loyalty, and you have a section in the book where you get into the pathfinder aspect of the wolf spirit. And can we talk a little bit about that? Or maybe I'd like to read the invocation you have for Sacred Path. Okay. So Linda wrote this beautiful invocation, and it's Sacred Path, and it is talking about the wolf as the pathfinder. So I'm just going to read this paragraph to you guys here. Invocation, Sacred Path. Wolf spirit as pathfinder, we petition you from our heart's deepest longing to hear our wolf howls as we call out to you, asking that you show us the way to our sacred purpose on earth at this time. May each of us be open to letting go of our ego attachments to who we thought we were and to becoming willing and teachable so that we may have the courage we need in order to speak our truth to the world. Lead us on this great journey of life, always with integrity and dignity, as we learn by your example, how to seek out, discover, and follow the path that is truly ours to take. Show us how to step out willingly onto the sacred path as we walk around the great medicine wheel of life and death and rebirth and face our fears so that we may embrace what is ours to do in this world. May all beings know that there is a sacred path and that we only need to listen to our voice in the wind and follow our wolf nose in order to find the scent that will lead us homeward.
Hmm.
Amen. That is beautiful.
Thank you. Well, you know, with each one of these, as you've said, these qualities, I meditated and prayed energetically to the spirit of the wolf and to the wolf clan and all the wolf clans that have been around from, I don't know how long, none of us really know, perhaps thousands of years, the earliest wolf clans with people who honored the wolf and felt that kindredness and honored the wolf for keeping them alive and showing them how to stay alive and how to also develop compassion for each other and not be just warring, and how to keep their pack safe and love their families and how to discover the path that would lead them to shelter, how to discover the path that would keep them safe, how to discover the path that would keep them in a community, how to discover the path that would lead them to their food and to, you know, their prey and all those things, and out of the weather and out of harm's way. And now I think it's time that the Wolf Clan went to another octave, and that on our beautiful planet, with so much hope and so much possibility in these changing times, as we're struggling as human beings, if you will, to make the shifts that we need to make, you know, around violence, around violence in our schools, even in our schools, you know, around violence on women and children especially, and, you know, the faceless, nameless kind of wars that are going on that are by remote control, and, you know, and the, you know, the tar sands and, you know, the killing of wolves. I mean, pick a subject, you know. The old dinosaur fuels that are truly dinosauric, you know, that need to be changed into green energy. Now is the time that we can call each one of us. There's so much to be done, Lisa. And that's the exciting news, really, that if there's so much to be done, then surely every one of us has a sacred place in the pack and a sacred gift. If we will follow our own nose and our own intuition and follow that wolf spirit so that we can educate ourselves and open up to our inner truth and find our great and sacred place on the sacred wheel to bring forth these gifts at a time when all of us need to make our contribution to the pack.
That's right. Amen. Because it is the collective consciousness that evolves the whole planet. And it is as we become connected to our unique tribe that we resonate with, that collective consciousness resonates in that truth and that love. And that is, it just continues to spread and increase and evolve all of us. So I love the fact that you brought in the wolf animal, because you use it in as a teaching tool, but it's got such a great analogy in our lives today when we see so much lack of loyalty or lack of community or lack of family even. I mean, you know, kids raising themselves and parents afraid to be parents and parents wanting to be friends instead of parents.
Right.
And so it's alpha. Yes, it's like, you know, I find it so, I look much more now because I see the similarities of how life unfolds itself in its perfect divinity. And I see that in this book, that you wrote about a topic and you took a simplistic animal on one level and yet the intricacies of the animal also, of what it involves and what they're about, because it's more than just an animal.
Yes.
And we can learn, if we tune our attention closer to nature, we can learn more from what nature's telling us, because that's how God speaks to us.
Absolutely. And that's how
you know, you wrote this beautiful, incredible book, and it takes you right to your heart of who you are and how God speaks to us through the wild, through the animals, through the trees, through the earth, because if we don't get it now, our children are the ones going to suffer.
I know. And I have 5 grandchildren. And between my husband and I, we have 5 children. So, because I've now become a Wolf Clan grandmother, I have literally hundreds of children and grandchildren all around the country from my students and, you know, and that have become dear friends. And, you know, I can't tell you how many spiritual daughters, sons, and granddaughters and grandsons I have now in addition to our blood kids, you know.
How sweet is that?
Yeah, and people love that, and they long for that, and they love the wolf, and they long for that community, and that's why we moved here to the mountains of Western North Carolina, into our retreat center, and in a beautiful place called Isis Cove. And it's where we do a lot of our work, and we also travel, but we've traveled a lot in the past few years because of my books, and just came back from an extensive tour out west, but. We're really bringing people here. We have 25 people here right now, who've been here for 3 weeks, and this next week will be their fourth week, who are completing their training with us as shamanic breathwork facilitators. And we also, as an ordainment board, will be ordaining them as shamanic ministers to go into the world to carry forth these kinds of teachings, to do breath work with people, and to operate as a shamanic minister in the world. We have people from Australia, from Peru. We went to Peru. Now we have someone here from Peru. We have people from two people from England, from Haiti, from just and all over the United States and from Canada. So, you know, and we're in a beautiful nature setting, and I want to just comment on the thing you said about nature. You know, in ancient Egypt, and I've written three books, I've co-authored three books on Egypt, shamanic mysteries of Egypt. And in ancient Egypt, the gods, if you will, or the deities there, were really all of them were connected to nature spirits. And what they called them was the netters, or another way to say that, the plural of netter is neteru. The Neteru of ancient Egypt, the gods. And those gods, if you will, or deities, were nature spirits. And the word, it's thought that the word nature came from the word neter, from those gods. And that it represented water, earth, fire, air, and spirit. And that the word nurture came from the word nature. So if you track it back, if we truly want to be nurtured and heal ourselves, we must get back to nature and back to the original overlords or spirits of this planet. And that's just an interesting concept. I thought that you might appreciate.
Oh, I love that. I think that that's, you know, the whole piece that I find we need to remember and stay mindful of is that as we become more technologically advanced, it's so important to be equally, if not more so, more in tune with nature. Because if we advance so much in our tech world and lose touch with nature, we're going to annihilate ourselves. We're not going to prosper.
That's so true. You know, in my afterword in my book, I'm just going to read this because I can keep it concise that way. I said that Wolf offers us many lessons, but the most powerful lesson is love.
Right.
Love's power is derived from its limitlessness. Love, the Wolf teaches us that our expanding consciousness and accepting all of creation as our true family, animals, plants, rocks, the heavens, the elements, spirit guides, all these things, expands our capacity for love and for creating positive change in the world. The Wolf's wisdom can help us dissolve the barrier that we have built over time that obscures the truth about our interconnectedness with nature. And when this barrier is removed, we begin to perceive all of nature as our soul family, not some other. We can have gratitude and view our earth and her wonders not as our resources to be divvied up and squandered or fought over, but rather as our soul family that is offering us their sacred gifts to be shared and appreciated. This change in perception can help us to become whole again.
Oh, amen. And that is, you know, that sums it up right there. It's like if we can just get out of our own way and breathe a little deeper and tap into nature, it's like the universe spirit speaks to us, and that's it. That's how simple it is.
Mm-hmm. It's really true. It really is.
I mean, it's like, you know, there's so much complication that's brought in, but really when we take it down to brass tacks, that's where we're coming from. And I love how simple you bring truth to all of us in your books, in your wisdom, in your work, in your incredible foundation that you have over there in Western North Carolina. And I want to make sure everybody can get a hold of you. So I'm going to mention your book one more time, and then I'm going to give you the floor to so everyone can contact you or get your information. Again, we have had the wonderful privilege of speaking with Linda Starwolf. And she wrote The Spirit of the Wolf. It's the channeling, the transformative power of the lupine energy. And she also collaborated with her son, Casey Piscatelli. So it is a gorgeous book. I recommend anyone who's interested in the wolf energy, definitely. This will clear up and connect the dots for you. And Linda, I'm going to give you the floor to let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you for another wonderful interview. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
You are so welcome. You're such a joy. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you. Well, the best way is probably to go into my website, which is pretty easy to remember because I created a process called the Shamanic Breathwork Process. So it's shamanicbreathwork.org. We also have a university called Venus Rising University where people receive degrees through us for shamanic psycho-spiritual studies. Right now the university website is under construction, so I'm not going to, it's being updated, so I'm not going to refer people there. And I'd also like to mention that I have another book out called Sacred Medicine of the Bee, Butterfly, Worm, and Spider, and that's co-authored with Anna Carriott Barrett. And it takes us back into teachings around nature and the sacredness of those creatures and how without those creatures, then once again, humankind could not exist. And so we're really looking to bring people back to nature and back to their true spirits. And we work with people in all kinds of ways. And we have an extensive, if you will, website with lots of information about books, upcoming events, our university, and our Shamanic Ministers Network. If people are interested, again, shamanicbreathwork.org.
Oh, thank you so much, Linda. And I urge all of you to definitely follow up with her. She's such a light, and she does so much for our planet to bring more light and love onto it. Linda, thank you so much for gracing us with your beauty and your light today. God bless you and everything you do, and give Casey our best as well. We'll have to have him on at another time.
Sounds great. He would love to be on. And thank you, Lisa, for the good work you're doing in the world and for following your wolf nose and following your own wolf spirit and doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing at this time.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you for that. I truly appreciate that, Linda. Thank you again, and may you have a beautiful week.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And now we are going to, that was just wonderful with her. She has the best insights and inspirations with her writing. I really recommend everybody to look into her books, Linda Starwolf. And we're going to move into my next guest, which I'm really looking forward to talking to. This is a woman who has undergone incredible challenges, and she evolved in her own spirituality through it. She was diagnosed with cancer and overcame many, many, you know, once you are diagnosed with cancer and the treatment that you have to endure, it's a challenge every single day. And the fact of what she was able to accomplish and get through and her own spiritual evolution that she has evolved to in writing the book. She wrote the book To Love, Ginger Ingalls, and we are going to talk now to Ginger about her courageous battle in overcoming cancer and also her spiritual growth and evolution in the book To Love by Ginger Ingalls. Ginger, God bless you. Thank you for being on Unlimited Realities today, and welcome. Hello, Ginger.
Yes.
How are you? Welcome to Unlimited Realities. How are
you? Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm okay.
Now,
I like how you said to get through each moment because I'm sitting in the lobby of my apartment building and I'm keying into my physicality and how I have pieces of green apple stuck in my teeth from my breakfast. And that helps me to
ground
myself.
Well, you know, grounding is one of those wonderful things, and oftentimes when we're faced with a catastrophic situation or a devastation or a diagnosis, our grounding becomes a little shaky. And I'm sure when you were told about a diagnosis of cancer, your groundedness became a little shaky. Is that true?
Actually, it's not true. When I was told, I went into complete peace. I remember I was wearing my cranial sacral therapy, black pants outfit with a black shirt and black pants. And I sat down and I grounded in my sits bones, my pelvis, my bottom, and I just put my feet right on the floor, and I was completely grounded and peaceful and surrendered. And I thought, okay, this is it. So that's really the only thought that came to me. There were no other thoughts except, okay, this is it.
And what emotion followed the, okay, this is it? What emotion did you have that followed that?
Well, as I remember right now, and I speak about it, I get a little nervous, and I feel fears and some residue emotion from the experience and wondering, how could I have been so peaceful? You know, that's my emotional self talking. How could I have been so peaceful in that moment? And I realize now, 2 years later, that number one, my pattern is emotional reaction does follow in a delayed way with me. And I don't know if it's that way with most people or not, but it is with me.
Okay.
And I also realize, hey, I didn't know at the time how serious the situation was. I know now, after almost
having gone through it.
And having gone through it and realizing how serious death is and could be and is always a possibility at any moment in our lives.
Sure.
But at the time, I was just completely at peace, completely grounded, completely centered, and I just remember feeling a peace. If you want to call that an emotion, which I do actually, it's a foundation of complete peace and being present, being in the moment. And then understanding with a felt sense in my whole body and heart,
mm-hmm.
Now I have to take care of myself. What's the next thing? But I didn't say that in my head. It just was an understanding in my deepest body felt sense. And
okay.
I was completely in my body.
And was that when you felt, I'm sure, you know, in that moment, as you're kind of processing the information, and luckily for you, there was an ability to kind of ground yourself in the peace aspect. As that information and diagnosis started to filter through your psyche and your being, and you started to get into the therapeutic aspect of healing the disease, were there any times during your treatment that fear arose? And if so, how did you combat that?
Oh, yes. The night before the surgery, there was complete peace also, and I had a few moments of fear, and I just kept disciplining myself to focus on the peace. And okay. I discipline myself to gather all of my belongings and put them in one pile and say to my son, I don't know if how I'm going to wake up in the morning or if I'm going to wake up in the morning. And these are my important papers in this one little pile. And he said, okay, Mom. And that was it. So then I went through the operation, and right before the operation, it was the same feeling of peace. My heart started to beat really fast, like it just did before calling you on the radio show.
Okay.
And this is interesting because I've had some fear the last 2 days with flashbacks, et cetera, but it's the same process that I just used before we came onto the radio show, which was I disciplined myself to focus on peace.
Right.
Because a fast heartbeat is not going to help anything.
Right.
So it definitely, I remember before the operation, it was a little fast, and they waited a few minutes. And I remember them saying, can we give you something before the anesthetic? And I said, no, I can do this by myself. I know how to calm myself down. I know how, I want it natural. I want to do it naturally.
And in taking, because, you know, the process of calming oneself down, of not being in fear, it's a lot harder than just the words saying, yeah, I wasn't in fear. Yeah, I calmed myself down. Because the process of doing it takes a tremendous amount of mindfulness, focus, and intention. And when your emotions are kind of like, you know, at that threshold of, okay, I'm about to lose it, but I'm going to keep it together. You know, there's that piece of like, where are we coming from? Are we grounded today, or are we kind of in a neurotic anxiety realm? And honestly, if anyone is facing such a diagnosis, it's a miracle that fear does not stay. You know, you did a miraculous,
yes,
incredible job of keeping it at bay. By being mindful in your breath, mindful in your thoughts, mindful in how your body felt. And let's talk a little bit about how to make that process simple for somebody else, one of our, a listener perhaps, who may be going through cancer treatment or chemotherapy right now, and they could use a tool to help calm themselves down. If you can just explain briefly how your process worked for you, maybe it would help somebody else.
Well, it feels to me, and I'm keying into my current moment and the memory of that time and that period, including going through chemotherapy, which was another year process. So there was a long, extended process of doing this. And flashbacks now even, and I have a CAT scan coming up in a week and a half, so I'm going to have to do the same process again. And it is just, I'm slightly, I don't want to say hunched over in my body, it's just more of a humbling feeling in my torso, and I feel my heart, when I feel fear, I remember memories. I consciously say or choose a memory that is about love and loving myself or loving someone else, whatever comes up. And then I just feel that feeling in my torso, and I try to hear myself breathe. And I try, and I, if something doesn't work with that little more mental way, I will take my finger of one hand and put it into the palm of the other hand and press really hard. And that will show me that there's sweat and oil, and it will immediately put me into a place of being able to calm down enough to hear myself breathe or feel myself breathe. There's a visual cue that one or that we could also have, which is to just watch your chest or your hands or some part of you. How is the breathing, and what is the quality of the breathing? And I tend to breathe very shallowly anyway. I've always breathed shallowly, so I'm very mindful of that, to not do that. But also, now here I'm feeling right now in my pelvis like, ooh, I'm starting to breathe shallowly even as I speak about it. But
right.
I try not to force it. I just readjusted my bottom on the soft chair and kind of sat back a little bit. So now the breathing is coming more deeply.
And you also, before we finish up, you also created a CD, is that right? Of a meditation. And that's also called The Blessing, is that correct?
It's called Blessing, yes.
Okay.
And it's, yes. Go ahead.
And how can we find that for?
That will be released in a few weeks. There's no release date set yet, but it will be available on CD Baby, on iTunes and Amazon.com. So you can just Google my name, Ginger Ingalls, I-N-G-A-L-L-S. You can also go to my Facebook author page, Ginger Ingalls Author, or you can go to my website, gingeringalls.com, and the link to that will be posted in those areas, and it will be all over Google. It will be widely publicized.
Wonderful. Well, Ginger, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. God bless you and your journey and your continued good health, and your incredible spiritual work that you bring light upon the planet for so many. I just want to thank you for being such an inspiration, and what a wonderful, beautiful soul you are to bring your wisdom and truth here. So thank you, Ginger.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome. Many blessings. God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too.
And we thank Ginger for being our second segment guest today. What a difficult journey that is for people to have to go through, and first to process, because it's not always received as well as Ginger received it. And many people who are diagnosed with a hardship, with a diagnosis of treatment like that, they break. There's a little breaking in their psyche, in their soul, in their fears, in their anxieties. And you know what? That's okay. That's normal. And we just take that state and we move through it. And one day becomes the next day, and you become a survivor. And God bless all of you who are battling that fight. Without further ado, we're going to move into our third segment, our final segment. And I absolutely love this woman. She's been on before. And we have, for our next segment, the ever wonderful and wise dietitian and nutritionist, Terry Cochran, who is such a wealth of information. I feel so blessed to have her join us when she's not traveling around and saving other people's health problems. She graces us with her wisdom for Unlimited Realities, with all of her knowledge. And so without further ado, let me introduce once again Terry Cochran, nutritionist and dietitian, who's going to talk to us about how we can implement more healthy choices and foods and nutrition into our lives. Terry, welcome to Unlimited Realities, and thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you,
Uh-oh, I think I just lost her.
Hello?
Hi, Terry?
Lisa, sorry, we had a little, are you there?
I am, I hear you.
I'm
happens.
Sorry, we're having
no
technical
worries.
Difficulties. I apologize.
No, no problem.
There we go,
no problem.
I'm sorry.
That's
so
okay.
Again, as I was saying, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's so good to be back.
We love having you. You are just such a wise soul. I just am so appreciative. So thank
well,
you.
Well, as am I. And today, you know, as we had talked about, I'm going to talk a little bit about the sacred balance using nature. And
wonderful.
As a nutritionist and an herbalist, I really rely on nature as the primary source of healing for all of us, whether it's through the plant life, through animal life, we are inexorably connected with nature. And everything that we bring into our bodies from nature have balancing properties which allow us to operate optimally at a cellular level. And that gets into the biochemistry of how our body operates. We have unfortunately
wonderful.
Become very disconnected from nature.
Mm-hmm.
Through processed foods, through pharmaceuticals, through polluted air, through polluted water, which then requires the body to work at a very, very rigorous level to help rebalance itself. Because it's taking in substances that are man-made, that are not coming from nature. And when that happens, we become imbalanced.
Okay.
Now, a great part of my practice is using herbs. I use herbs because, why do I use herbs? Well, herbs are the forefathers and foremothers of our conventional pharmaceutical industry today. What they found was that herbs had active components. But along those active components, along with those active components, were balancing properties. Well, what the pharmaceutical industry did, and I'm not trying to pinpoint and point to the pharmaceutical industry because it saved a lot of lives, but they took those active constituents, they removed them from the natural herbs, and then they created very potent drugs. And these potent drugs have saved lives, but without those balancing properties, we lose the balance. And so we know now that annually there are about 170,000 deaths from prescription medications. This is not an overdose. These are from prescription medications that have gone awry in our body.
Mm-hmm.
There are only about 10. They don't have specific information, but they believe it's about 10 adverse reactions to herbal annually.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge,
right.
Exceptionally large difference. If we look at Germany is on the forefront of herbal medicine. 80 to 90% of the prescriptions that they use are herbal.
Wow.
Very few real pharmaceuticals used. And so herbs really are what we need. Herbs and plant life and animal life and seeds and legumes, everything that comes from nature is what our body needs. Salt. Salt gets such a bad rap in the United States. Why? And the FDA has said, please reduce salt to 1,200 milligrams a day. Well, why is that? Because as a society, we're oversalted because we eat inside the package.
Ah.
The way that we flavor foods is with the salt, but salt that has been adulterated.
Mm-hmm.
Salt that has been stripped of its natural iodine, of its natural magnesium, of its natural mineral content and quality. And so we're left with a very imbalanced substance. If you look at sea salt, sea salt has that magnesium, which is so important for the adrenals, for the stress mineral, for heart function. It has that iodine, which is so important for the thyroid function. It has the chloride, which is so important for moving things into the intercellular fluid. And then it has sodium, of course. Sodium and potassium, they talk to each other, and they do a little dance called the sodium-potassium exchange to allow the cells to communicate with each other.
Ah.
So salt is good if you're using it in its right form and if you're eating what I call outside the package. If you're eating whole foods, foods in their natural state, foods that contain balancing properties, salt can be very healthy. I actually saw a client this morning. She was salt deficient.
Oh, wow.
Yes, she's salt deficient. She says, I crave salt. I'm always looking for salt. Now, she's already a very informed consumer of food, and so she knows when she craves salt, she goes for Greek feta or natural olives. She doesn't go for French fries, you know, from a fast food chain. So that is really important that we understand that salt is not bad if we are cooking our own food and managing the salt intake we put into the food.
Gotcha. Now, I'm a big salt lover, but I do use it. I've always have been. My father was a salt lover. I mean, I think it's kind of like you get used to a certain level of salt, and then you want that level of salt. So I'm literally training myself not to salt my food, and it's
right, and
horrible.
I don't think, yes, and I agree. We shouldn't salt our food. We should just put in the amount of salt that's going to give it the flavor. Necessary. And using that Himalayan salt, that natural sea salt, that's going to give you what you need.
No,
we don't want to salt our food. The only time we would salt our food is if we are not cooking with any salt in the food.
Gotcha.
Either you put it in during the cooking process, and if you do so, then you do not add it at the end.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sadly, what we've done is we have become oversalted because our bodies are used to this very adulterated salt that's in fast food, that's in packaged goods, to enhance flavor. Our chicken breasts at fast food restaurants have been pumped with salt solution to make them larger. So it really is about understanding where our salt is coming from. And
now, I have a question
in
regard to the salt. Because I know the Himalayan salt is the best, but now we're seeing the push, and we have for many years, on sea salt. And as I have been reading sea salt labels, not all sea salts are created equal. So how do we know what's a good sea salt versus a fraud?
Well, one cost. If it's a dollar a box sea salt, it's not high quality.
Okay.
So you have to look at price point. You have to look at the structure, the crystal structure. What's the size of it? What's the color? Where is the source? Japanese sea salt is very good. French sea salt is very good. So look at where they're sourcing the salt from, how deep the salt is coming from. I was just in New York recently, and I went to a wonderful little store called Salt, and they have salts from all over the world.
Wow.
And infused with different herbs and flavors, but their salt is very expensive. Why? Because they're mining it very deeply. They're mining it from a pure source. So, yes, I think we need to know where our source of salt is coming from, also who the provider is, to make sure that they're not adulterating it or mixing it with something else that may not be pure salt.
Right, because it's interesting as you learn about, you know, different aspects of foods and you go into a little bit deeper, you realize how you're being duped even still, like even the olive oil. You know, I thought all olive oil was created equal, and they're not.
Right.
So, it's all very, very, very interesting to me how mindful you have to be, because marketing and advertising unfortunately pollutes us in so many, many ways. But we have, with our salt, we have about a minute left. Where can our audience find you, get information, connect with you? I'm going to give you the floor, Terry.
Thank you, Lisa. Again, my apologies for the mix-up at the beginning of the show with the interference.
No worries.
But you can reach me through my website. It's healingpaths, PATHSVA.com. You can reach me through my Facebook page, healingpathsnutritionva.com. You can reach me through Twitter. Or if you just Google my name, Terry, T-E-R-I, Cochran, C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E, you can find me through any of those social medias if you Google my name. I also have released a book, Restorative Recipes, The Mindful Path to the Essential You, and it really gets back to the fact that we share a very essential relationship with food, and that is the difference between health and disease.
Amen. And it's a wonderful cookbook. I've eaten everything out of there, and I love it. I am always going back to it. So I urge you all to buy a copy. It's wonderful. God bless all of you. Terry, thank you so much for being my favorite nutritionist. So,
thank you, Lisa. Always
you
a pleasure.
You have such wonderful wisdom. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful week, Terry. Everybody else, have a wonderful week. We'll talk again next week. God bless you. And Mazel Tov. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.